The Other Bennett Sister by Janice Hadlow. Read by Kristen Atherton. Part 1. Chapter 1. It is a sad fact of life that if a young woman is unlucky enough to come into the world without expectations, she had better do all she can to ensure she is born beautiful. To be poor and handsome is misfortune enough, but to be penniless and plain is a hard fate indeed. Four of the five Bennett sisters of Meryton in Hertfordshire had sensibly provided themselves with good looks enough to be accounted beauties in the limited circles in which they moved. Jane, the eldest, was the most striking, the charms of her face and figure enhanced by the unassuming modesty of her character. Elizabeth, the second sister, made up in wit and liveliness for any small deficiencies in her appearance, while Catherine and Lydia, the two youngest, exhibited all the freshness of youth, accompanied by a taste for laughter and flirtation, which recommended them greatly to young men of equally loud and undiscriminating inclinations. Only Mary, the middle daughter, possessed neither beauty, wit, nor charm. But her sisters shone so brightly that they seemed to cancel out her failure and, indeed, eclipse her presence altogether, so that by the time they were grown, the Bennet family was as regarded as one of the most pleasing in the neighbourhood. It was common knowledge, however, that the Bennet girls' prospects were to be envied a great deal less than their beauty. At first sight, the family appeared prosperous enough. They were the principal inhabitants of the village of Longbourn, and their house, solid and unremarkable as it was, made up in comfort what it lacked in pretension. There were servants to wait at table, a cook in the kitchen, and a man to tend the gardens. And though Mr. Bennet's possessions were not extensive, they were quite enough to sustain his credit as a private gentleman. Few of the families with whom they were intimate were sufficiently rich or genteel to condescend to them with confidence, and the Bennets were regarded, in public at least, as eminently respectable ornaments to Hertfordshire society. But in the country, no family's business is ever truly its own, and everyone knew that the outward prosperity of the Bennets rested on very uncertain foundations. Their property was subject to an entail which restricted inheritance to male heirs. If no Bennet son was produced, the estate would pass eventually into the hands of Mr. Bennet's cousin. At first, this had seemed of little significance, as baby after baby arrived at Longbourn with promising regularity. Surely, it was only a matter of time before the much-anticipated Bennet boy put in his overdue appearance. But when the tally of girls reached five, and it was clear no more children could be expected, the entail cast a deepening shadow over the family's happiness. On Mr. Bennet's death, his widow and daughters would be left with nothing but £5,000 in the 4%, and a humiliating reliance on the uncertain charity of a distant and unknown relative. Their friends were not without sympathy for the Bennet's plight, but that did nothing to dampen their curiosity about what was to come. For what could be more compelling than to watch at first hand the probable wreck and dissolution of an entire family's fortune? Mr. Bennet refused to gratify his neighbours by displaying any obvious disappointment at the cruel trick of fate which had deprived his dependents of the security he had once so confidently expected them to enjoy. To the world at large, he remained what he had always been, detached, amused, and apparently resigned to an outcome it was not in his power to change. To his family themselves, he seemed barely more concerned. Perhaps in the long hours he spent in his library, he wrestled with himself to find an answer to their plight. If so, he shared neither his anxieties nor his conclusions with them. His wife, however, had none of his restraint. Mrs.